Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station, broadcasting from here in Kodiak, Alaska, high atop damp Signal Hill. It's 39 degrees and what they're calling a light rain fog mist. I would call it a heavy rain fog mist. We're looking for more rain for the rest of the day. High near 42 today. Northeast wind to 20. Your chance of precipitation a mere 90%. Rain tonight too. Low around 36 tonight. Northeast wind to 15. Becoming southeast after midnight. Could gust as high as 20. Rain and snow tomorrow. Becoming all rain after 10 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 43. Coming up on the Midday Report, medical workers say the community of Fairbanks should be more alarmed that the hospital's capacity is being strained by high COVID-19 rates. And Alaska's court suffers a malware attack. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. A community today mourned the loss of Andrew Brown Jr., a black man shot and killed last month by law enforcement. As Liz Schlemmer of member station WUNC reports, his funeral was held today in Elizabeth City, North Carolina.
The Brown family filed into the church sanctuary in a processional led by church leaders and Reverend Al Sharpton, who gave the eulogy. But first, Brown's family spoke. Here's his son, Khalil Farabee.
It's a terrible way we had to be together like this, but, you know, seeing everybody, I'm glad we're together like this right now. He would have loved this.
Speakers called for lasting change and justice for the Browns and other families in attendance who have lost a loved one in police shootings. And again, the Browns attorney, Ben Crump, called for the body cam tape of Brown's killing to be released. For NPR News, I'm Liz Schlemmer in Elizabeth City.
More than half of adults in the U.S. have had at least one COVID-19 vaccine shot. But as NPR's Allison Aubrey reports, the pace of vaccinations is beginning to slow down.
The number of vaccine shots given per day has trailed off a bit in recent days, and public health officials are focused on ways to make it more convenient and to overcome hesitancy. The slowdown comes as a variant from India has been found in the U.S. Virologist Angela Rasmussen of the University of Saskatchewan and Georgetown University says there are already variants with similar mutations in the U.S. She notes the plan to restrict travel from India to the United States could be helpful.
It's important that we keep out new cases of SARS coronavirus 2, but we really need to be focusing on what matters most right now, and that is vaccination.
Beginning Tuesday, the U.S. will restrict travel from India to the U.S. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
U.S. travelers who've been fully vaccinated may be allowed into Europe this summer. Terry Schultz reports the European Union is considering a proposal to ease restrictions for non-essential travel among those who have been vaccinated for COVID-19.
The latest recommendation from the European Commission would allow tourism by everyone who has received vaccinations approved by the bloc, which includes AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, and Pfizer. People coming from countries with very low infection rates would also be allowed to travel, even if they haven't had their shots. Regardless of the EU-wide proposal, individual governments still have the right to enforce their own rules, such as requiring negative tests at their borders.
Terry Schultz reporting. On Wall Street, approaching the close, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 239 points at 34,113. This is NPR News in Boston, Washington.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Medical workers at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital say the hospital's capacity is being strained by high COVID-19 rates, and the community should be more alarmed. The hospital is receiving a surge in patients from the Fairbanks North Star Borough, but also from the Delta Junction and from those diverted from Bassett Hospital on Fort Wainwright. Medical executives gave a report to the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation on Friday, saying they are demoralized by the lack of community response, even as the disease becomes more preventable.
The hospital is reporting record high admissions of coronavirus disease, even more than the surge last November. About 18% of the admissions at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital have COVID-19. Dr. Barbara Creighton, who has been attending many of those patients, says the surge is preventable.
There is the disconnect. You know, we have businesses open, school buses flying, restaurants are going, and we have visitors happening, yet we have our highest case rate. And so we're like, does anybody see this? This place is on fire with COVID.
People hospitalized for COVID in the last year were generally elderly, and many died. But that demographic is nearly 70% immunized in the state, so fewer elderly Alaskans are getting sick. The patients admitted in the last weeks are younger, and they are not fully vaccinated.
Really coming fast now, and that's the most worrisome thing for me because it's a different demographic. These are young people cardiac arresting before they come into the hospital. These are middle-aged white guys, sorry to say that, but it really is that demographic that hasn't gotten around to getting vaccinated or doesn't really feel like they need vaccination. They want to see what the vaccine is going to do before they take it. Those are the people that we're seeing come in with COVID.
Shelley Ebenall, the CEO of Foundation Health Partners, the nonprofit that runs the hospital, says the staff is working through a change in patient response.
This new group of patients, some of these folks, these are generalizations, so be careful with that, are folks that are anti-vaxxers, anti-maskers, and they don't believe that they have COVID or they're sick because of it, and our staff is getting some very angry folks.
Dr. Creighton says treatments have changed. The workhorse therapy has become high-flow oxygen and non-invasive ventilation where there is no tube down the patient's airway, and they can eat and talk. But treatment is still only supportive. There's no cure for COVID-19. There's just a long wait while each patient's lungs recover.
And we're seeing them stay longer because they're not dying. They're actually staying for 2-3 weeks and turning around, which I've really never been more proud of. You know, this could be our finest hour.
She says the hospital is running out of non-invasive ventilators as patients fill up the COVID wing. Dr. Angelique Ramirez, Chief Medical Officer for Foundation Health Partners, says a month ago the hospital had several days with no COVID-19 patients at all. Now the urgent care walk-in at Tanana Valley Clinic, as well as the FMH Emergency Department, are seeing several COVID patients each day, and at the hospital, 10 to 12 folks are in the COVID beds each night. The entire second floor of the South Wing is only COVID patients.
I don't know that we've had such a dramatic change in 1 month before.
Ramirez reported to the foundation board how younger people are spreading the disease faster. She says right now the borough has a testing positivity rate of almost 10%.
This is the highest it's ever been. You can see that it's a sharp uptick. And what this tells us is that we are not capturing by testing everybody who's positive. The challenge is if they don't know that they're sick, they are out in the community spreading it.
Ramirez says confidence and hope comes from factors that are present now that weren't part of the equation last November. For example, 70% of the FHP staff is vaccinated, unlike last November and December, when many were sick at home or quarantining because they'd been exposed to someone with COVID-19. Also different is other Alaska hospitals can take patients from the interior if FMH becomes overwhelmed.
So we're the hotspot. It's nice to know that other places have capacity, but the reality is still, we are the only hospital in the interior.
CEO Shelley Ebenall says the hospital staff is deflated by the surge in patients and the community's not taking easy measures to fend off what has become preventable.
They are still in full COVID mode. I know our community's tired. I know they don't want a mask. They want this to be over, but it's not. We When you see our staff members, please tell them thank you. They really need that right now. Our morale is really low. They feel like they're not being appreciated for their work because they're in the thick of it right now.
In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
House lawmakers passed a bill on Friday that would, for the first time, allow shellfish like crab to be grown in hatcheries and released into the wild to bolster commercial fisheries. HB 41, sponsored by Ketchikan Independent Representative Dan Ortiz, would put shellfish on the same footing as salmon species that are bred in hatcheries across the state.
The bill gives fish and game a solution to potentially help address declining stocks of shellfish, like stocks of crab out west or abalone in the southeast, which have suffered from overfishing and predation, instead of relying only on conservative management.
The Maricultural Bill found bipartisan support. Homer Republican Representative Sarah Vance told legislatures she sees benefits for coastal communities throughout the state.
I didn't think that I was that old to say, hey, back in the day, we had razor clams this big, and now they're small, and they can no longer make that available to the public. This is an area that we need the enhancement. We need these nonprofits to come in and say, we're going to help rehabilitate the shellfish to make it available for common use.
Some Alaska biologists have voiced concern that an influx of hatchery shellfish could do more harm than good to what remains of the state's wild stocks. They're particularly concerned about crabs, one of the more mobile species of shellfish. Only two lawmakers oppose the legislation, though, not on environmental grounds. Wasilla Republican Representative David Eastman said there should be a cap on permit fees. He also took issue with the fact that the bill allows the Department of Fish and Game to penalize people, saying he thought it was backwards to allow penalties when the regulations still needed to be written.
I didn't think that
if we are going to be, in a sense, creating new crimes, I think that the legislature ought to know what it is that the regulations are that are going to attach to these stiff penalties, and have the ability as legislators, as elected representatives of the people, to make sure that those regulations are in fact what the people want to attach to such stiff penalties.
Eastman and fellow Wasilla Republican Christopher Kirka were the only no votes. The bill also allows the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute to promote hatchery-born wild-caught shellfish in the same way they market hatchery-bred salmon. A companion bill in the Senate has not yet been heard. It will require passage by the state senators and the governor's signature to become law. Alaska's court system was forced to disconnect its online services over the weekend after discovering a cyber attacker had threatened to insert malware into court computers. That means court filings, court record searches, and payments of fines aren't currently accessible online. It also means that online court hearings, scheduled over the next few days, will take place over the phone. Alaska Supreme Court Chief Justice Joel Bolger said IT employees first noticed minor anomalies on a handful of the court's 3,000 computers on Thursday. A cybersecurity team looked into it and recommended the system be disconnected from the internet on Saturday around noon. There's no indication that any private data was accessed, and the motivation remains unclear, says Bolger.
For example, we don't have any information that any credit card information was taken from payment sites. So I can only speculate, you know, foreign actors sometimes seek to discredit public institutions. If they could manipulate our operations or our data in some way, they might want to find some profit in that.
He says the FBI and other state law enforcement agencies have been informed about the attack. It's not yet clear how long the disruption of services will last, says Bolger, but he expects it to be resolved within a few days.
I don't have a better estimate than that. We're still in the process of assessing the problem. And after that is done, we will, of course, clean our network of whatever kind of malware that we discover and come back online as soon as we can.
For those with court hearings scheduled in the next few days, Bolger says they should contact their local court system for updates on how their hearings will be held. The Alaska House of Representatives will take more time before beginning the final debate on its version of the state budget. House Speaker Louise Stutes deferred action on the budget yesterday after the minority caucus Republicans protested not having dozens of their amendments heard. Early in a marathon day of floor sessions on Saturday, the Alaska House of Representatives rejected a proposal to pay PFDs of more than $3,000 this year. Big Lake Republican Representative Kevin McCabe proposed the budget amendment to pay dividends based on the formula in state law at an estimated cost of more than $2 billion.
This is simple. We either follow the law, we are going to vote for a full PFD, or we're not going to vote for a full PFD.
Anchorage Republican Representative Sarah Rasmussen tried to show what it would take to balance the state budget with full dividends without overdrawing from the permanent fund's earnings reserve. Rasmussen, who doesn't belong to either caucus, proposed an amendment that would cut state spending on state agencies by an amount equal to the cost of full PFDs.
But the reality is, Alaskans across the state are still asking for services. The MATSU is still asking for troopers. Anchorage is asking for K-12 education. Fairbanks wants the University of Alaska funded. Kenai Peninsula wants their roads plowed. Members on this floor have requested the roads being plowed. Coastal Alaska wants their ferries. Rural Alaska wants affordable heat.
Rasmussen withdrew her proposal, saying it would cause legal problems. Sitka Democratic Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins said he appreciates Rasmussen's proposal.
When you spend down the permanent fund unsustainably, everybody loses. If you like dividends, you lose. You're not going to be able to pay dividends in the future. If you care about ferries or the silver tip maintenance station on the Kenai or whatever your priority is, you lose. You lose. Everybody loses when we start spending down the permanent fund.
But Palmer Representative Republican Delana Johnson says the state should follow the PFD law.
As we go through this budget, it doesn't say that the permanent fund dividend is paid last, Madam Speaker. It says that we shall pay the permanent fund dividend.
The full PFD amendment failed by an evenly split 20-20. Lawmakers did pass an amendment to the budget on Saturday that would require the legislature to open the Capitol building to the public on or before May 19th. The session must end by that date, according to the state constitution. Mushing champion turned car racer Lance Mackey of Fairbanks walked away from a serious crash at a car race in Wenatchee on Sunday. Onboard video of the crash posted on Mackey's Below Zero Racing Facebook page shows Mackey's car grazing another, going airborne, and impacting a wall along the race course. Mackey's car came to a rest on its side on the track with what appeared to be fuel pouring onto the pavement. Members of the race crew talked to Mackey, get the car back on its wheels, removed its bent steering wheel, and helped Mackey out. In the video, Mackey is seen climbing from the wreckage and walking away to crowd applause. A subsequent post says the 50-year-old Mackey is sore but otherwise okay and spending time with his kids. Mackey won 4 Yukon Quest titles and 4 Iditarod titles between 2005 and 2010, and while he continues to mush, he is also focused on car racing. Mackey has suffered numerous hardships and challenges, including cancer, drug addiction, and most recently the loss of his partner Jennifer Smith in an ATV accident last year.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska's salmon are smaller. How might that affect markets? More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Since 2010, Alaska salmon have been getting smaller. That conclusion is based on 60 years of measurements from 12.5 million salmon across Alaska, excluding pinks. A study by Nature Communications has compared average body lengths before 1990 and after 2010. Chinook salmon have shown the most size reduction, averaging an 8% decline, compared to 3.3% in cohos, 2.4% in chum salmon, and a 2.1% shrinkage in sockeyes. Researchers speculate that rising water temperatures in lakes and streams have prompted salmon to head out to sea far sooner than normal. The drop in time spent in freshwater slows down fish maturity, increases time at sea, and the salmon return at younger ages to spawn. How might smaller fish affect markets? Smaller fish produce lower yields. Tasha Cadence is with Tradex, a global seafood trading company based in Canada, for over 30 years.
Anyone who smokes their salmon has a very specific recipe guideline in order to produce a consistent product. Therefore, if they typically were to use a 4 to 6 pound sockeye and the catch is heavy on the 2 to 4 pound sockeye, they have to retool the whole operation.
The smaller size also hurts processors who sell fish portions.
These changes in processing could directly affect companies who make prepackaged and portioned flavored retail items for freezers.
The smaller salmon could affect short-term values, but that could be offset by a big decline in global harvests of sockeye, pinks, and chums this year. In the longer term, Tradex predicts that a shortage of wild salmon inventories will lead to pricing gains as buyers, quote, lean towards the demand for smaller salmon. Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It's the third day of May, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 6:13 and it won't set again until 10:03. That's going to give us 15 hours and 50 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 35 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this day was 19, set in 1945, and our record high was 61, set in 1915 and 2003. Currently 39, sort of dismal out there, I won't lie to you. We're looking for more rain and 90% chance of it for the rest of the day. Northeast wind to 20 miles per hour. Hopefully we'll get to a high of 42 today. For tonight, rain, low around 36. Northeast wind to 15, should turn to the southeast after midnight and could gust as high as 20. And your chance of precipitation overnight, just 80%. For tomorrow, rain and snow, becoming all rain after 11 a.m., mostly cloudy skies tomorrow. Southeast winds to 20, gusting to 30. And we're looking for just scattered rain showers on Tuesday night. Maybe a little snow. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 2:25 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 0.2 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 9:29 this evening of 6.2 feet. Our next low tide for the middle of the night here on the east side will be at 2:31 a.m. and be 3.6 feet. And our high tide for tomorrow morning will be at 8:31 a.m. and be 7.1 feet. Over on the west side, Uganic Pass tides, you also have an outgoing tide. Your next low tide will be at 2:45 p.m. and be 1.1 foot, followed by a high tide at 9:34 p.m. of 11.7 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night on the west side will be at 3:19 a.m. and be 5.1 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning will be at 9:11 a.m. and be 11.4 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet, a 996 millibar low, 230 nautical miles south of Middleton Island, will move to 90 nautical miles west of Yakutat and go to 1,020 millibars on Tuesday morning before dissipating. A 1,002 millibar low, 55 nautical miles south of Chignik, will move to 40 nautical miles west of Sitkanak Tuesday morning and go to 1,001 millibars. It will then move to 175 nautical miles south of Sitkanak and go to 1,010 millibars on Wednesday morning. As a result of all that low activity, for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, we are looking at a gale warning through Tuesday. For right now, we're looking at northeast 20, but that's going to come up to southwest 35 this afternoon, north of Dangerous Cape, south northeast 25, seas to 10 feet. For tonight, south 35, seas to 14 feet. And for tomorrow, south 35, north of Dangerous Cape, southeast 30, diminishing to 20 in the afternoon, seas to 11 feet. We're on the west side in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through Tuesday, northeast 25 right now and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, look for northeast 30, becoming east 25 tomorrow afternoon, seas 9 feet, subsiding to 4 feet tomorrow afternoon. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, Chiniac Bay, small craft advisory tonight and tomorrow, northeast winds 20 knots right now and seas to 7 feet. For tonight, those winds are going to shift to the southeast and increase to 25 knots. Seas to 4 feet will build to 8 feet after midnight tonight in Chiniac Bay. For tomorrow, southeast 25, diminishing to 15 tomorrow afternoon. Seas to 8 feet, coming down to 4 feet tomorrow afternoon. Up in Marmot Bay, small craft advisory for tonight and tomorrow too. Northeast 20 right now, seas to 6 feet in Marmot Bay. For tonight, those winds will shift to the southeast, increase to 25 knots. Seas building to 9 feet after midnight tonight in Marmot Bay. And for tomorrow, southeast 25, diminishing to 15 tomorrow afternoon, seas to 9 feet, should subside to 5 feet tomorrow afternoon in Marmot Bay. Due to COVID-19, the Alaska Business Development Center is providing free tax preparation to rural communities remotely from Anchorage. If you filed for unemployment before mid-May and had unemployment in 2020, you may be eligible for an additional refund. The IRS will begin reprocessing these refunds in May, and there's nothing more you need to do to get that refund except to send your tax documents in. You can send them to ABDC for free remote tax preparation. For more information, visit their website at www.abdc.org or contact their office at 562-562-0335. The Kodiak Arts Council and Frame Shop. Let me start over. The Kodiak Arts Council and Frame Shop are inviting Kodiak artists to submit new original creative work to be included in the 21st annual Crab Festival Art Show. The show will accept and feature artwork by Kodiak artists completed within the last 3 years. Eligible media include just about everything from drawing, mixed media, pastels, pottery, sculpture, digital art, jewelry design, woodwork. The art show will be staged in person downtown at Fisherman's Hall, right next door to all the fun of the festival. The deadline to register as a participating artist is May 21st. Complete guidelines and a link to the online submission form can be found at kodiakarts.org or theframeshopak.com. Some meetings coming up. Tonight, the Citizens Board of Equalization is meeting. That's happening at 5:30 in the Assembly Chambers. Also tonight, the Consolidation Committee is having a meeting. That will be happening at 6:30 in the Borough Conference Room. Tomorrow, the Women's Bay Area Service Board is having their regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. Also tomorrow, Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having their regular board meeting. That's happening at 6 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall tomorrow. Kodiak Audubon and Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge will host Dave Dorsey and his snowy owl Ghost. That's happening virtually on Saturday, May 8th at noon. Ghost will be present for the first 15 minutes of the Zoom session, so you don't want to be late for that. Dave will be happy to answer questions after the short presentation. Registration is required. All you have to do, though, is to go to kodiakaudubon.blogspot.com or visit their Facebook page, the Kodiak Audubon Facebook page, and you can find a link to register there as well. The event is organized and sponsored by the Kodiak Audubon Society and the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge. For more information, contact Cindy Trussell at 486-2878. The Kodiak College Technology Workshop for DC Electric for Vessels was moved a week. So if you wanted to take that, that's happening now with the 7th and 8th. That's this weekend, Friday and Saturday. It's a 12-hour workshop for all beginners, nothing but learning, no testing at all. And if you go fishing and deal with DC electrical, it's just about as handy a course as you could possibly take. This workshop is available for ages 14 and up. For more information, contact Lorraine Stewart at 486-1209 or lestewart@alaska.edu. That phone number again, 486-1209.
Arctic Care 2021 is coming to Kodiak May 5th through May 13th. Arctic Care 2021 is a no-cost healthcare services program provided by the U.S. Department of Defense in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association. Arctic Care offers no-cost dental, medical, and optometry services to anyone in the Kodiak community. To learn more, including how to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 486-9870.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.